Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
We are back in your lives, everybody. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live. It is Dan Cadobio. It is the champ, Chris Algieri. And we are powered by PPV.com. The summer slate is coming into focus. Some big names coming up on the PPV.com schedule. Manny Pacquiao, Mario Barrios, Zoo. We got Barrios. I said that already. Zoo. We got, who's Zoo? Fundora. We got everyone coming here. Tank. Roach 2, which is also rumored to be coming in August. You can watch it all on PPV.com with me and Chris in the live interactive chat. Some more friends will be joining us. We'll be going out to Las Vegas. I got that Las Vegas itch, which you probably should go see a doctor if you have a Las Vegas itch.
But, well, no, if you have an itch to go, it's okay. If you have an itch when you come back, that's when you have to go to the doctor.
And not the first person to have an itch when they come back from Las Vegas. We're going to be heading out there in these summer months, maybe even more. Who knows? There's a lot coming down on PPV.com. They are proud presenting sponsor. Chris Algieri rocking the New York Knicks number one. Is that an Amari Stoudemire jersey?
No.
Algieri on the back? Good God. And it's a Chris Algieri jersey.
Yeah, when you fight in the guard in the big room, they give you a custom jersey.
What a flex.
Awesome.
That's a flex and a half, bro. I'm shocked by that. I mean, I'm just like another one of Chris Algieri, pro versus Joe. When you fight at the garden, he just throws out. They give you a personalized Knick jersey. Well, I got to go to the Knicks store.
I only fought in the big room once, and you know, from a New York guy who was a ticket seller, because it was like once the Barclays came about, like I fought there, I've main evented there four times, so I got kind of removed from MSG, and MSG wasn't doing a bunch of big fights when I was fighting, so I did finally get the fight there in one of my returns. I scored a TKO, entitled eliminator. Good.
Did a few theater shows. I remember a few theater shows of yours there.
Yeah, I fought at the theater like four or five times.
I like to broadcast from the garden. I mean, if you're a New Yorker or you're just a sports fan, you know that it's a hallowed ground. And I keep saying Thurman. Why is Keith Thurman on the tip of my tongue? I have no idea. Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano.
Yes.
July 11th, we'll be fighting in MSG, and I hope to be on the broadcast in some capacity so I can look up at that ceiling and say, wow, I've made it. Mom, I've made it. I don't know if I'll get a customized Knick jersey, but – in my world,
we might have to just do it on our own. Just get you on, just so we can match. Because then we have a team now. The Knicks are actually good. They can play.
Well, let's not jinx it. All right, we've had some. They've gotten blown out. They've choked away leads. They've come back on 20-point deficits three times now.
Yep,
it's crazy. I'm a huge Knick fan. New York City is. I saw something like $800 million has been pumped into the local economy here, and of people
because
going
of the
out.
Games?
Buying. Yeah.
Wow.
People going out for the games, people buying shit, people go like Knick fever, man. Because I'm telling you, in this city, it's pretty divided. Mets, Yankees, Giants, Jets, Rangers, Devils, Islanders. Everyone loves the Knicks. The Brooklyn Nets don't exist in New York. Here's some New York trivia, New York information for those that aren't from around here. No one gives a damn about the Brooklyn Nets, especially when Durant and all them left. Yeah. So now it's Knick City, and everyone is just huge games coming up.
You mentioned hockey. I'm an Islanders fan, but when the Islanders are out, I'm a Panthers fan.
And the Panthers, I don't follow. Yeah, I heard they're kicking ass and taking names, like one of the best
kicking ass,
like most dominant hockey teams to come around in a long time.
Yeah, I think the first two games against the Canes, they scored 10 goals and only gave up two. So it was 10-2 in two games. Ridiculous.
Shit, that's a lot. I'm not a hockey guy, but I know that's a lot. I know numbers. I know a deficit. How was Memorial Day weekend? I saw some red meat on the IG story. I saw some fights. I saw some exercising. That's pretty much Chris Algieri in a nutshell.
Pretty much. That's my favorite kind of weekend is exercising, calling fights, and meat. having barbecues. So that was, it was a great weekend. But also, I fasted. I did a 60-hour fast this weekend.
Wow.
Just to kind of, I don't know, I've been reading a lot about it, and, you know, in terms of longevity stuff and health stuff and gut rest. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to give this a try. So I know what I'm talking about when people ask me about it. And I had a good
How
experience.
Was that?
It was good. It was fine. It was, you know, everyone's
like,
are
you ornery?
Right? No, not at all. It was normal.
Headache?
Pretty good. No. I would get certain points. I would, because I, you know, listen, I'm a science guy, AKA nerd. So I was doing all my monitoring. I had my heart rate monitor. I had a blood pressure cuff. I had ketone urine strips, so you can tell if you have ketone bodies and whatnot.
What are these words? I don't even know what the hell you're saying.
Dan is not a science guy.
No.
I was monitoring everything. So a couple times, like, I noticed like my heart rate was high, and then I checked my blood pressure was high. Get a little dizzy, and I was like, oh, I'm getting dehydrated. And then just add some salt to your water, and literally 20 minutes back.
Salt up the water. I know that from Dr. Mike on Instagram. Salt that water up.
That's wow. I think if people did it right, it really wouldn't be that difficult. Like I barely lost any weight too. So be like, oh, I lost so much weight. It's like, yeah, you're just dehydrated. You're not drinking enough water. You're not using sodium. It was very, very easy. Good for the gut. Like my guts feel a lot better. But other than that,
really, I got to try this.
It was just, you know, for me, you know me, Dan, I like to cook. So I like to cook. I like to eat. So it was like a boring weekend. I was just like, all right, I'm not cooking.
Just
or
sitting
eating.
There. Yeah.
Just sitting. You know, what I was doing, I did a lot of work and got a lot of napping in, but
prepare to get a lot of questions in the comment section about fasting now.
Oh, hit me up in now you can actually hit me up in the DMs and we'll talk about fasting.
Goes down in the DMs when it comes to fasting. Let's get into it. It wasn't the craziest weekend of fights, but we had some interesting stuff come down. Biggest, and that's the heavyweight division, of course, in boxing. And biggest was Moses Atalma. I've been saying his name wrong. Picked up a huge win, not huge, but picked up a solid win over Mike Balogun, who dropped him three times en route to a second round knockout. It's his eighth straight knockout. He hasn't gone the distance since July of 2023. He has his last eight fights, 11 have lasted 11 rounds. It's absurd. This is the next big thing in the heavyweight division. I figured I did a little deep dive on him. I figured we're going to be talking about him for years to come, hopefully. So let's dig into Moses Atalma, Moses Atalma.
That's going to happen a few times, guys. We're sorry.
It's like William Skull. Like, it's not, it's Skull. Yeah, it's school.
School.
So Moses Atalma. Atalma. I wrote it like It Tao, the restaurant group, Ma. Nice win. I know there's some detractors that are, who'd he fight? You know, let's get this guy in there with a live body. Not that easy. But if you just use your eyes, right, Chris? Like, our listeners are advanced boxing fans. Sometimes you got to use the eye test. And that knockout to end the fight off the back foot, southpaw stance, quick right hook. Like, what, from a 20-year-old? All right, let's... Who is this guy, number one? Well, who is Moses Atalma? This guy's now everywhere. And he's the next great heavyweight, which boxing needs.
Yeah, so I did a little deep dive on him to prepare for today's show. And he's one of those guys, like you said, our fans, they know boxing. If you just watch a little bit of him, the way he moves, how explosive he is, and you're just like, okay, wow, this kid, because he's 20 years old, is special. And he's not small either. He's 6'4". He's got close to an 80-inch reach. He's coming in the ring at 250. So he's a modern-day super heavyweight. And with that athleticism, the way he moves out of that southpaw position, he's reactive. He's athletic. He's got good technique. He's something special. And like you said, all goes well, he's going to be around for a long time. This could potentially be the future of the heavyweight division. And I'll say it right now. I'm saying it right now. Moses Atalma is going to be the future of the heavyweight division.
I don't know if that's even a hot take anymore, because I'm hearing very respected people in boxing, you know, talking this guy up because of the skills, the things that we just listed, the
skills,
height, 6'4".
Size.
Right. Not undersized, not too big, not lundering, quick on his feet. Devastating power. I just saw from a right hook off of his off of the back foot as a southpaw. You know, he's got the speed. He's like a perfect mix of everything we've seen over the last 20 years. There's a lot of comparisons to Mike Tyson, which I think are quite unfair, but the only reason we're hearing those comparisons or reading about those comparisons is because of the age. And, you know, they were trying to get him a title
explosiveness.
Shot.
Me is very explosive.
Of course. Yeah. But like Mike Tyson, like, it's like, just don't bother to just start putting that pressure on these fighters. But 20 years old, knocking people out on the doorstep of a heavyweight title because he is ranked number one by the WBO. Joseph Parker is the interim champion. So he is just ahead of Italmo. But Italmo, I mean, he's number one in the WBO. Like, they could be talking about giving this guy title shots. I'm talking about that a little bit in just a little bit about where he goes and how Frank Warren will move him, because that's a very fun discussion when you have a prodigy like this, when you have a sublime talent. How do you move a guy like that? But back to that stoppage. Like, Balogun had only been stopped once. I called one of his fights in Pittsburgh a bunch of years back. He's a former NFL linebacker. You know, he's 41 years old. I mean, they're not, these are the types of guys that are going to get in the ring with him right now. But just from what you saw, the technical aspect, because we can talk about where he goes next and all that, but I want to get from you the technical stuff. Well, like, what makes him so special? Why should you at home be like, okay, I will believe the hype?
Well, for one, being a southpaw, I don't care what you say, is an advantage. Southpaws are difficult to deal with, and especially like heavyweight. Yeah, especially at heavyweight. But it's his athleticism. That's the number one thing that when I look at him, that makes him stand out from the other heavyweights that are his size. 250 pounds, 6'4" guys are not usually as reactive or light on their feet the way that Moses Italma is. His ability to get in and out, to fight off the back foot, to pull back, like you said, he's got a nice check hook. He punches hard with both hands, but he's super reactive. He gets low, he changes levels. I read somewhere that his favorite fighter was Nazim Hamed growing up in the UK, which is really cool for a heavyweight. He's like, I don't have a different style than him, but I do take some of his aspects and bring it into my own style, which that's pretty cool that he's athletic enough to do stuff that a featherweight used to do. Who was
what
also
exactly,
like,
though?
One of the most dynamic featherweights.
Did you see that? I mean, because, like, obviously, in the Hamed, like, first thing you think of Hamed is the theatrics. Yeah. But also, if you peel that back, he was a very good fighter. It had to be very technical. Like, and also, like, personality. Like, I watched a few interviews just to get a feel for him. Like, I was kind of surprised to see the Hamed comparison. Obviously, Hamed is a legend of UK boxing, but I don't see too much of that in his fighting style. Like, maybe that will progress.
You can't be a Nazim Hamed at heavyweight. But I, you know, there's a little bit of like, he'll fight with his hands down and shimmy his shoulders a bit. He'll punch from that low waist position. So there are some of those things, but they're very, very minor. Again, you can't really do that with heavyweights. Fighting with your hands down in heavyweight division, not a good idea. I say it all the time. Nobody has a chin at heavyweight. Everybody can punch. It only takes one shot. So being that risky is not a great idea. But technically, he's very solid. He's got very good technical fundamentals in his style. You know, a guy who didn't have a big amateur background. He's really just a natural. He's a natural athlete. They gave him a little bit of fundamentals in terms of his technique, and he just brings that athleticism with those fundamental style, fundamental movements, and puts it together beautifully. And then, of course, he's very explosive and powerful. So you put that all together, you got a really, really dangerous young heavyweight.
He's got that power where it looks like when he just touches you with anything, it moves you. And then when he really gets some force behind it, even though that shot that he landed on Balogun, the final shot was off the back foot, which still had power on it, and it was his offhand, which is just crazy. But you see how these guys fall. When you fall forward, that's not good. That's when you got a different type of power. That's like a fight over. When you start falling forward, we see a guy go timber on the way down. That means you have game-changing power. Italma has that, you know, the 8 straight knockouts. Let's talk about his amateur career. 24 amateur fights, which is a really low number.
Really?
Because, you've heard of guys 100, 200, you know, the Lomachenkos and the Usyks.
Especially guys over there in Europe. In Europe, they fight way more.
I wonder what the reasoning was with that. Just get him pro and get it moving. And undefeated as an amateur, 11 knockouts in 24 fights. Was a football player growing up, born in Slovakia, which was interesting. I did a real deep dive. I think you did as well. I think we both fired up the Wikipedia for this guy. Born in Slovakia to a Nigerian father, mother is Slovakian, moved over to the UK to escape some of what was going on in Slovakia and just not enough opportunities. Got into soccer, football, which I think it's the route for a lot of kids over there. His older brother is a light heavyweight boxer.
I was going to bring that up. That's probably why they moved him up so fast. You know, like his brother was already a really good amateur, and then he turned pro already. He's like, might as well just go pro.
Like they saw, like you always say with your nephew, it's like with you and your brother, you said, were helping you go through your career early on. You guys didn't exactly know what you were doing because there isn't really a handbook for boxing. There's no team. There's no organization unless you sign with like a really big promoter and they can take you under your wing. But it's not like you get drafted by the Knicks and, oh, my God, I'm in this storied franchise, part of this organization. There's a million different departments. I can get my footing, my feet under me. No, boxing, you're making your own decisions.
Yep.
So I can see that as well. We're assuming, but I could see like maybe they look at the brother's trek through the amateurs, and this kid was probably so much better than the brother, obviously, and they were like, why don't we just get this guy pro and let's get some money?
Yeah, but also being a heavyweight, I think that speeds the things along as well. I mean, you got a guy who's got like legit power. He's not, I watched some of his amateur stuff. He was knocking guys out there too, which is hard to do. So they're probably just like, all right, you know, we got a heavyweight. Let's just move this along. And like I said, he's got fundamentals too. He's a natural. He's for a guy with only 25 amateur fights. You shouldn't be this damn good, but he is.
It's a lot of hype. I mean, this is the biggest thing in boxing. We're talking about who's next. I'm excited. Like it always happens like this. You know, I've talked to Lou DiBella and guys that have been around forever and, you know, always a little worried about, you know, who's next. Oh my God, who's going to be next after Ali. I was talking to Lou DiBella about that, but fighters emerge and the 80s come along. And then we get in the 90s with Tyson, De La Hoya, Pacquiao, Mayweather, Roy Jones, going to the 2000s with the stars there in the current day now. But, it, you know, with heavyweight, it's like, all right, who's next? Who's the next big heavyweight? You know, we've seen all these guys finally all fight each other for the last 3 or 4 years. And we want to find out who can carry that torch. And I like to know his mentals, you know, like with Joshua, that he had a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
You know, Joshua was looked at as the next big thing. He literally beat Klitschko to take that torch, charismatic and all that. But it turned out that even he couldn't handle all the pressure that came along with it, which I think he's done a pretty good job, all things considered, with Joshua. But he had some ups and some downs. So we're going to learn about Atama with the mental side of it because, you know, if he's reading the press clippings and he's looking at the current state of boxing with the amount of money that's being thrown around in the heavyweight division, I would love to know what's going through this kid's mind at age 20, where all this hype around him.
And I know he's obviously a super talent, but I just hope they don't move him too fast. Like, there's no reason, like you said, he's number one in the WBO. Like, are we going to throw him into title fights now?
How does that happen? How is he number one in the necessary WBO?
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, there's so many top
fights.
The heavyweight division is actually deep right now. So there's a lot of talent out there. I just hope they don't move him too fast. Another thing that I've noticed that could deter a heavyweight, and this is every heavyweight, it's not just Moses, the weight. I've noticed his last three fights, the weight fluctuation up, up, up. I think what was the first one? Let me pull up.
He doesn't have like he doesn't have the Joshua build.
No, but
he has a little bit of chunk to him.
Which is not fine. Cut. Everyone's different. But that's not the issue. Listen, whether he weighs 230 or 250, he looks pretty much the same, but I just don't like looking at a scale, or I'm looking at his last three fights. Marius Wach, 239. Dempsey McKean, that's where I saw him. I was like, wow, that's really good. His kid's really good. Dempsey McKean, 249. That's a plus 10 pounds.
Oh, Mike, I was going to say, I thought maybe he'd be heavier for Wach, because Wach is just a freaking huge mountain of a man.
No, and then this last fight, Mike Balogun, 254, up 5 pounds. So he jumps 10, he jumps 5. Like I need to be, you need to be careful with heavyweights because they can eat themselves out of having a great career. Think Riddick Bowe. You know, Riddick Bowe was so talented, so good, but the scale, he was always going up in the scale, and it showed when he fought. I hope, like you mentioned, the mental about this young man. I hope that they're keeping this together and understand what they have in front of them. They need to keep this guy fit and ready.
Yeah, he signed with Queensberry. Frank got him, Frank Warren. It's got to be killing Eddie Hearn deep inside. I think they did a little Q&A, the two of them, and they asked, the interviewer was like, what's one fighter you wish that you had signed that the other did? And Hearn right away was like, Atama. And it was like, I mean, it's like, dude, that's like a blue chip type of prospect.
But, and heavyweight. Everyone wants a heavyweight. Heavyweight is just dollars, man. There's just money. Every promoter I've ever dealt with, from the lower level guys like a Lou DiBella and a Joe DiGuardia, like they were just like, everybody wants a heavyweight, man.
Yeah, so he signed with Queensberry, and Warren, I think, is saying the right things, and he doesn't want to move him too fast. He doesn't want to he doesn't want to stall his growth too. So it's like this catch 22, the art of matchmaking, the art of dealing with a potential star. Once again, this isn't a sport where you can just have a schedule and it plays out in front of your eyes, like in the NFL. A quarterback over the ticket of Jaden Daniels on the quarterback for the Commanders. You know, he's just plays out, and you face who you face. You play who you play. Like, it's matchmaking in boxing. So therefore, you got to be careful with it. You know, he's talking about Otoma. He's talking about, I want to fight Hrgović. I want to fight Zhang. I'll fight both of them by the year's end, but it's not going to be next. Next up, he is going to be on the July 19th card at Wembley, which I think is brilliant. He's going to be in it's the Usyk Dubois card.
Get him used to the big stage. That's great.
Get him used to the big stage, Wembley, that exposure. We just don't know who it's going to be. Martin Piccoli was ringside for his last win. And Piccoli is a rumor that's been thrown out there. Warren.
But I saw an interview where Piccoli goes, he's too early for him to fight me.
Yeah. Maybe he's trying to posture, but Warren poo-pooed it right away. He's like, Martin Piccoli got pasted by Joseph Parker, then looked awful against Ajagba. So why would I put my guy in there with him? Like,
because he looked awful against Ajagba, so he's not as dangerous as he has been in the past, and you get a good win on your record. But
he still comes with that price tag, though.
I'll let Frank Warren do what Frank Warren does.
Frank Warren, man. I mean, Eddie Hearn just sucks up the spotlight over there, and a lot of the American promoters.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
That guy is a survivor, literally. He's got a freaking bullet dent in his forehead. You know that story?
Yep. Yeah,
he's shot a bad dude, head. Man.
He's legit, super legit, old school gangster type promoter, like in the movies. Like he's a character,
and he's come out on top. Like those five on fives, beating Matchroom's ass, just being a
I love
promoter.
How he told Eddie. I love what he told Eddie. He's like, I'm gonna go 5-0, like flat out. He's like, we're gonna win every fight.
And you know, being a promoter in the UK in the shadow of Eddie Hearn can't be easy, but he has emerged and. You know, they're legit. Queensberry is legitimate, and now they have the future. They could have a guy for the next 15 years if everything goes right with Atalma. You know, so he's feeling good. But I do trust Warren to move this guy the right way. Do you rush him? Like, do you take – like, he's 20 years old. So
yeah,
he's going to be fight July 19th, and it's not going to be a big name. Like, maybe Otto Wallin is being rumored, a guy that could fiddle. They call him a fiddler, right? Someone that could fight. You think so?
Yeah, southpaw versus southpaw, another southpaw, a ton of experience, pretty durable. I mean, Valine's been stopped a few times, but he's durable. It took Joshua a little bit to figure him out, you know, to get him out of there. He took some damage on the way to the
Chisora stoppage. Made him fly off the one side of the ring to the other.
But Chisora's another really tough guy to deal with. Valine, though, he can make you look bad. He did it to Tyson Fury. Yeah, that's a tough
long
fight.
Time.
I mean, listen.
Jermaine Franklin?
It was a long time ago. Jermaine Franklin. Another very durable guy. That would be a huge step up.
He said he wants us to he's like, I want to go 8 rounds. That's what Atalma said. Like, I need to go rounds. Like 11 rounds in your last 8 fights. Great, because it's
have we
it's
seen
done
him
its
get
job.
Hit yet?
I mean, I'm sure he has gotten hit, but not hit.
I'm wondering.
That's why
when he gets hit.
Right, I've posted about him, and you know, Dan, you're just hyping up another guy. He's facing a plumber, which is disrespectful to his opponents. But
what was the guy? McKean?
Dempsey McKean, first second round stoppage. McKean went the distance
12.
With Hrgović.
Yeah, he got stopped in 12 with Hrgović. Hrgović is a brutal puncher. That's really impressive.
I don't expect every fan to go into the weeds and have a little bit of nuance here, where you got to use your eyes and see what he does, if the footwork and the power and what he did that last fight. Like, yeah, it was a stoppage of a 42-year-old former football player, but how he did it, impressive.
He did what you're supposed to do with that guy, and he was in complete control the entire time. He dropped him in the first. He dropped him twice in the second with beautiful highlight reel punches, too. Just
like zero
bang,
feeling
bang,
out.
Bang. Yeah. No, right to it. Sure, good defense too. His ability to fight on the inside and put himself in position on the inside. I'm so blown away with someone with such little amateur experience is as good as he is. I'm having trouble putting it together, and that's why I keep saying he's a natural.
Yeah,
he's just
man.
A natural boxer.
Atama has listed Hergovic and Zhang by year's end. The internet is throwing out Franklin, Valin, Bacoli as a dark horse. I don't see that happening. Hergovic, I think, would be a good one, but he just fought in April. So I don't expect a huge name July 19th. For July 19th, maybe Valin gets the nod. Jermaine Franklin.
It won't be Zhang. It will not be Zhang. I'll tell you that right now. I literally just got off the phone with his manager, Tommy Lane, a little while ago. We were talking about things moving forward. It will not be Zhang.
We've seen this forever in matchmaking and boxing. Bright young talent star. It's almost like WWE. You need someone to put you over. In WWE, like, the star puts over the rising guy and they pins him, though it's all choreographed. But
yeah,
you can do that in boxing. You can make the match and hopefully it plays out like you want it to be, like a Joshua versus...
It's the Floyd Gotti. It's the Mayweather-Gotti
fight. Yeah, putting him over. Gotti put Mayweather over by just taking a beating that night. He needs that. And Zhang can look at this. Not that Zhang is like the guy that's going to put him over, but that's a name. And they're going to have to overpay. That's another thing, too, is when you get to with Atama, is like Balogun, I'm sure, was paid handsomely to get in there. A lot of guys probably said no. But when you get up to like a Hergovic is going to ask for a king's ransom. Zhang's going to ask for a lot of money. These established names are going to say, oh, you need something from me, right? You need my name recognition. You need everything that I bring to the table. So you're going to pay up. So I know that Warren is obviously prepared for how this guy's going to get matched or what the demands are going to be asked of him if he wants to go that route, because they can go the other route, Chris, and they can go 6 to 8 fights over the next year and a half against the Balogans of the world or a little bit different types of styles, tall fighters, rangy, southpaws, plodding, explosive. And he'll only be 21, 22 after he emerges from that with a ton of experience. Then you go on your run.
That's the Tyson track, right? Fight 12 times next year. You know, Tyson fought like 12 times 2 years in a row. Like, got his record all the way up there. And yes, he was still young. They moved him fast, and he still fought for a title at a super young age. But I think that's the move, like you said. Just get different guys. All right, put him in with a southpaw. Put him in with a guy with a really sturdy chin. Put him in with a guy who can punch with a right hand. Put him in with a guy who can punch with the left hook. You know, and you just kind of build almost like the Top Rank route that they build their prospects. But keep him busy. You know, obviously he's coming out of these fights unscathed. He's knocking guys out in 2 rounds. I mean, just keep him busy. Keep him doing that ring walk, man. Ring walk, ring walk, ring walk. Get those KOs. Doesn't matter who you fight. Fight every carpenter and plumber and taxi driver there is, and just keep getting highlight reel knockouts. And when it's time, you step him up, step him up, step him up. I don't want to move him too fast. I want to see a Mike Tyson run.
I agree. It's so important for boxing. Now I'm looking at this as a boxing fan, looking at it as someone that, like, my livelihood is now boxing. So, like, we need a heavyweight to stick around. We need a new king. You know, Usyk, 38. Fury is putting out retirement videos in Italy. Joshua just had surgery and has got two more fights.
Do you think Tyson's really going to retire? Do you think he's not coming back?
I think he's coming back. Yeah, he's coming back. He's going to fight Joshua.
He's messing with us.
Next spring. You know, maybe not anytime soon, but like, he's definitely going to fight Joshua. The ultimate put over, if this was WWE, if Vince McMahon was behind the scenes with Triple H and they were pulling the strings, Atama would fight Usyk. And that's the changing of the guard. Can Usyk eat those shots? Can Atama figure out Usyk? But the only problem is, that's really rushing this kid's development. It would be undercooked on his side. No. And if you cook it right, you cook Atama right to al dente, black and blue steak, like Chris Algieri likes, then it's 2 years. And Usyk's 40, and he's probably out of the sport. So my dream of maybe of Atama Usyk WrestleMania perfect script ain't going to happen.
No. You know what I could see, though? Joshua. Wow. Joshua, that would be a
good symbolism
British,
written all over it.
That would be a nice British handoff. You know, like, you've got UK versus UK. They can do Wembley, huge. It can be Joshua being, you know, that heroic, legendary, I'm gonna fight the next up and coming best guy out there as my on my way out kind of fight, and the truly handing of the torch for the British heavyweights. That, damn, I can see that.
Life cool. goes fast because wasn't Joshua just doing that with Klitschko?
Yeah, it was.
Jeez.
And what an epic fight that was. That fight was awesome.
Would Joshua do that? I think his ego is... He has a big ego, but it's not like some big as some of these other guys. Would he risk getting splattered?
I think he would. I think he's a warrior. You know, he kind of did it with Dubois. You know, like, I mean, it was a title fight, I know.
Dubois.
But like, yeah, you know, like that's...
Dubois Atuma.
Well, Dubois is going to be the guy for a while. While Atuma's getting ready. Even if he loses, yes. Because Usyk, if Usyk wins this fight, what the hell else is he doing? Is he waiting around for Pattaya? That's pretty much it. Is he going to go to... Atuma's not ready. He's not going to be ready in a year. So there's nothing left for Usyk to do. So he exits, and then it's going to be Dubois again.
We'll see. We'll test Frank Warren's greediness. I mean, we talked about how of a legend he is, he's a great promoter. Still a promoter.
Yeah, still greedy. A promoter. Still a boxing still promoter.
Kind of a piece of crap. I mean, no offense. In the nicest way possible, you're a piece of crap. Yeah,
he doesn't strike me as a smash and grab guy. He doesn't strike me as a smash and grab operator.
No, he's a survivor.
Yeah, he understands what he has in this guy. This is going to be his biggest get, his biggest talent. Just do it right, man. Just do it right.
I bet you he's frugal, Frank Warren. I bet you he drives a humble car, you know, makes his own lunch. He's frugal.
He reminds me of, when I picture how he operates in his daily life, I think of the movie Snatch, and I think of those characters, like those gangster guys who just like, you know, real G's move in silence. real, just like.
He's got an Eddie Hearn dartboard, and he's just laughing at it.
Throwing darts.
Take that, Wonder Boy.
got you again. Bing.
I got a Talma and you don't. You got darts. And yeah, I it would be interesting to see if Usyk wins, the Talma hype train keeps going. I don't see that next. That would be going against everything that Warren just said. It would be kind of foolish on his part. Yeah. I mean, this is their long-term investment. This is their guy. So put him in the Hrgović. I mean, the end of the year... He should get a name, like get a scalp. Hrgović, Zhang, one of those types. You can go through the WBO. If he wants to stay in the WBO rankings, Zhang, Okoli, Jared Anderson, Chizora, Gassiev. I looked at that name because he's a name. And now he's coming up from cruiser. He just had a heavyweight win.
But if you're going to fight Gassiev, you might as well just fight Valin.
Right.
Because Otto beat Gassiev, just might as well fight.
A Jogba? Right. What if a Jogba gets that rematch with Bacoli, beats him? A Jogba, a Talma, good fight.
I like that fight. You get to see how he can deal with a guy who can punch, because a Jogba does have a really good right hand. It's not pretty much all he has, but that would be a nice test. I think he's one dimensional enough that a Talma should be able to get him. And if he can stop him, which is good, because no one has stopped a Jogba, even, you know, he went 10 hard rounds with Bacoli. So, yeah, that's a good fight. I like that one.
We'll see what happens with this prodigy, but I am now... He's made it on our radar overseas. I think he's made it into U.S. fight fans. He's on their radar now, and he has that candle, or now he has that distinction of the next great heavyweight at 20 years old, so we'll see how he moves. Over the weekend as well, Chris, Josh Taylor loses his third straight fight to Echo Usman. This was at 147, third straight loss now for Taylor. Back and forth fight for the first half. Looked like Taylor ran out of steam. Props to Esselman. That's probably the biggest win of his life for Taylor. Absolutely. Back to the, like, I don't know what Taylor does here. Does he retire? Does he try to go for a domestic fight? Does he go? I don't know. This guy was great at one point, pound for pound at one point, undisputed at one point. But man, what a steep fall off. Three straight losses. Could potentially be four straight if you count that first Catterall fight, which many thought that he lost. You know, three straight losses for a guy like him, that's mentally, that's tough. Physically, obviously, he's not there anymore at 34. I don't know what Josh Taylor does next.
Well, I'm going to say right here, he's done at the high level. He loses to a 36-year-old Usman who no one knows. He hasn't fought anyone. Looked like he was getting hurt by all the shots. I kind of always said this about Josh, Taylor, is that he just wasn't made for welterweight. He was like so good at 140. But all of his attributes were really at at 140. It's kind of like how I was. I was a much better fighter at 140 than I was at 147. Yeah. I can still fight the top level guys at 47. I don't see Taylor being able to handle any of the top guys at 47, even a couple rungs down. He really showed in that fight that, listen, his best days are behind him, and that's fine. He's had an incredible, incredible career. That run that he had to the Super Series where he collected all those titles and beat Pro Gray and beat Ramirez, like, that was awesome. At one point, he was a demon out there. And, you know, that guy's gone. And that's okay. He had a good run. It was a short run. He had a good career. Sure. Didn't he couldn't get the 20th win. You know, like, didn't get that. He was right there. It's really hard. It's really hard to get 20. 20's like a really, that's a marker for us to get to that 20th win. Doesn't matter how many losses you have. Getting 20 wins is hard. So now he's 19 and what is he, 19 and 3 now? 19 and
crazy.
3. I wouldn't mind seeing him do a farewell. I mean, that kind of was a farewell. It was in his hometown. I can't believe the decision went the right way. I was like, we're in Scotland, and
right. You
know, the crowd's behind him, and I'm like, listen, this guy won the fight, but he's probably not going to get it. And then the judges were on; they nailed it. I was like, oh, good, okay, for them. Look at that, good for them, guys, nice job, Scotland. Well, but yeah, I could see him doing like a kind of like a homecoming send off. That'd be nice.
You talk about the run that he went on, and now I see some fans and some chirping on social media about that run. Like, how good was Josh Taylor? And if you look at these wins now in the rear view, and we can now grade them a couple of years after, Regis Progray had the
and that was a prime the, that was a prime Progray,
right? Yeah, that's one way you have to look at it. But hasn't looked good in his last couple of fights, and is pretty much done at the high level. Ramirez as well faded really fast. But Taylor was the best of the crop. They all fought each other for the most part in that Super Six. We never got Ramirez versus Progray. We got Taylor Progray. We got Taylor Teofimo, which was the beginning of the downfall for Taylor. So it's an interesting look back. It's an interesting, you know, way to figure it out, because at one time, 2020, 2021, Taylor was top five pound for pound, and
he was taking heads, dude.
Not only taking heads, his opponent's combined record,
yes,
I think heading into that Ramirez fight was like 110-1. Mm-hmm. He was handing out O's. He was beating legit, you know, guys on the way up.
But I'm looking at it right now. Ivan Brancheck, 19-0 and IBF world champion, beats him. Regis Progray, 24-0, and I think he was a WBC champion, beats him. Then he, you know, knocks out some random Filipino guy. Then JC Ramirez, 26-0, and he was the WBO champion, beats him. Like, that's crazy. Just taking heads, taking belts, taking O's, back to back to back top level fights. All those guys were good. All of those guys could really fight. Brancheck at that time was a nightmare to deal with. Great wins.
All right, but what I'm looking at it too, like, one fight in 2020, one fight in 2021, one fight in 2022, one fight in 2023, one fight in 2024. Like, this dude had super momentum after the Progray win. And that was 6 years ago. He was 28.
Yeah.
And the Ramirez win, big. Was it as big as it could have been? I remember it was in Vegas. It was a smaller room. Catterall fight, big. In terms of, you know, those fights are always big over there. The Teofimo one was probably where he made the most money. So it's not all about making money. Like, I'd like to see him more active, but one fight a year from 2020 to 2025 is head scratching. I put out a tweet, and you're not on Twitter, so you don't see these tweets. You don't know what I'm dealing with out there in the freaking Twitter world. I'm going to read you my tweet. And let me know how you interpret this, because there was a lot of confusion over this. Great career for Josh Taylor. Won a lot of titles, made a lot of money. No shame in hanging them up. Hard to compete at 34 without PEDs.
Yeah.
How do you interpret that?
Where
I fired that off. I fired that off. I took a nap. Didn't look at my phone. Wake up. A billion notifications.
Shots fired, bro. Shots
no,
fired.
It's not. That was a compliment to Taylor.
I worded horribly. Everything was good. Boom, boom, boom. And then the PEDs at the end, dude. That gets people riled up. You know, no one wants to think
this guy says Brian Rivera. That last sentence is wild. I did a double take at the end.
That's dirty work. Here's,
but no, I wasn't saying. I understand now that it looks like that I said that. I'm insinuating that Taylor was on PEDs his whole career, and now he's not, and this is what he really looks like.
Oh, no. Yeah, I didn't. No. So I didn't take it like that. Oh, that's
how did
what
you read
really
it as?
Revved up as that he at 34. In order to continue being at the top level, you're going to need to do PEDs. And
thank you.
That's not allowed. We're not doing that. Taylor's not going to do that. So great career.
Yes. Exactly.
That's how I took it. But also, I took at it as like people get mad because so now you're saying all these fighters who are over 34 are on PEDs.
Yes.
Like no one wants to think their favorite fighters on drugs. But guess what, guys? Your favorite fighter's on drugs.
Thank you. This guy said, who are you taking a shot at? Crawford better be ever Usyk. I said, none. What the hell do you know about competing? Said global wrestling order. I said, I'll suplex your ass. Loma nice. Was at 35 fighting guys 25 pounds bigger, beating them up and no PEDs. I just said, okay. What's his name? All of a sudden, the dude from Snack gets into the cut. It's into the discussion. We got Canelo Alvarez, Conti? People are talking about. Conti. Just mm-hmm. crazy assumptions. With one tweet. Even my dad, who was sitting on the couch, was like, I was on the other couch. He's like, what'd you do? What's up with this tweet?
What'd you do, bud?
He's like, he looks at me and goes, not a lot of people are liking the tweet you just sent. I was like, yeah, I didn't word it great.
The OG steps in.
I don't want Taylor to try to sue me now that I said he was on Pete. The whole point was that he's not. And right. It's an admirable career. Admirable that career that this guy. He would be a perfect candidate to do PEDs. If he started doing PEDs at 32, 33, he wins. Maybe he wins these fights. One isn't the other. I understand that. But like, look at like baseball, like somewhere in the 90s, these guys that were taking the PEDs, like the Barry Bonds took it to another level, but like the Brady Andersons, the guys that were middling or like towards the end of their career and they took the PEDs and it prolong their career for another 5, 6, 7 years, another contract.
When you're in your prime earning potential, it's the same thing in boxing. You make the most money at the end of your career, but you're not the same physical thing anymore. That's why PEDs work, because it makes you younger again, essentially. You're basically, you've got, if I was 38 and felt like I was 25, and I had all the knowledge and experience I had at 38, but having the body that I had at 25 or 28 or 29, forget it. I would have been a multiple division world champion, and I would have an extra 10, 20 million in the bank, guys. This is why people do PEDs. I'm telling you right now, once you get to the seven figure level, when you hit that $10 million mark, hard to find guys who are running clean.
That's why, I mean, I've learned a lot from you when it comes to PEDs, and it was a little bit of that mixed into this tweet where a lot of fans were like, I'm like, guys, like, hey, I don't want to be that guy on Memorial Day weekend.
Drugs are real, dude.
Fighter.
They work.
Favorite fighters on something. Ade Oladipo, who I love from DAZN. I don't understand that last sentence he said. His opponent, who I've known for over a decade, is 36. Are you implying he's on PEDs? No.
Well, he's not
talking about the opponent
guy.
At all. I'm talking right. about right. just guys on drugs, like fighters that are on drugs these days.
The problem was that should have been a standalone tweet. it shouldn't have been attached to all the nice things that you were all the proper things you were saying about Taylor. Listen, on this show right now, we are tipping our hat to the champion Taylor.
Right.
Josh Taylor had a fantastic career. He was an excellent, excellent fighter, top level guy for a long time, and not a drug cheat. Like I'm pretty positive that Josh Taylor has been clean his whole career.
Well, that's another response too, is how do you know that Josh Taylor wasn't? I said, I haven't seen failed test. That's something we can go by. These guys, the ones that fail, we've been over this on a past episode. Go back and watch it. The ones that fail, usually they messed up. They didn't time it out properly. Mm-hmm. The guys that, so that was a fun little exercise. I looked at the tweet for a while, was going back and forth, and I just mute it because it just gets so annoying.
And you wonder why I'm not on Twitter. I can't, dude. You gotta think about each tweet so much because there's so much backlash, and like, there's no set it and forget it with Twitter. Like, you gotta say it, and then you gotta like defend your stance.
You're only doing this for clicks. I was like, I get nothing out of a tweet. I don't see any monetary. Like, I don't send off a fire tweet, and then I look at my bank account, and it's just rising. Yeah, that was the case. I'd be on it all day.
That's why you're king on TikTok. That's where the money's at.
We make money from social media by putting out good content, not shit posting tweets about Josh Taylor's PED use. Anyway, Angelo Leo, featherweight, gets the win in Japan. Chris Algieri was on the call. You were on the call from the studio. That must have been one heck of an experience.
Yeah, so call time was 1 a.m.
Yikes. And did you just go straight through? Did you sleep? Were you eating at the time?
So I did this on purpose. I actually started my fast on the Friday night prior. So I had my last meal at 7 p.m. and then I went right to sleep.
What was the final meal?
Steak and salad. It was a 14-ounce ribeye. It's nice. Really good.
Nice.
Steak and salad. So, yeah. So then I immediately slept. I ate at 7, went right to bed, and I woke up around 11. So I got a bunch of hours. So I was pretty good. I woke up. I had a coffee at home, and then I made an iced coffee for the road when I sat at the desk. Right before
coffee at 11 p.m. is a move.
Yeah. It's a dirty, it's a brain, dirty, dirty work.
It's a brain warp.
Dirty work. But, dude, you got guys at home who've never called a fight, because obviously almost no one listening has. I mean, actually, no, some of our compatriots do listen. But
they might mute the TV and do it.
You got to be locked in on a fight.
Oh,
on a live fight, you got to be super dialed. And the amount of caffeine that we all take in for a live fight is crazy anyway.
Bro, but first time, one of the first times I called a fight, I drank a Celsius for the first time. Oof. Because at the MVP events, they're sponsored by Celsius. So there's literally two guys, my guy Keith, handing them out like they're M&Ms. And I drank one. I was like, what's this thing going to do to me? I was fucking buzzard.
Yeah. My guy, Mark Kriegel, he's a big caffeine guy prior to show. So him and I, after shows, we're always like super buzzing. And like, we're like, all right, we got to go to the bar and modulate. We got to bring that.
A Major League Baseball player that was taking greenies. You know about those? They were taking greenies during the day, be out of their minds during the game. And then they would drink all night. Mm-hmm. And this vicious cycle, MLB was like, we can't have our guys speedballing. But you're doing it, but legally.
Yeah, we're doing it as a broadcaster. This is essentially the same thing, same idea. So
Tessitore has to get in on the caffeine.
Tess loves his espressos. He's done some overnight fights. He's talked about his espressos. But yeah, so had a bunch of coffee. And Paulie's the same way. He's a big coffee guy.
Italian.
We were on the fight, and we went live at 3. And we didn't get out to like 6 because the co-main, Pedro Taduan and Genjiro Shijioka. Oh. It was a rematch of a fight of the year from last year. The fight was sick, and they went 12 rounds, and that was the co-main. And Shijioka collapsed in the ring, and they had to take him out in a stretcher. So I think that had to do with the ambulance. So the ambulance went out. So there was a big delay between the co-main and the main. So the fight was way later than it was supposed to be. So it was a long night.
That's unfortunate.
But the Leo fight was good.
We don't want delays.
It was a really good fight.
We don't want delays. We don't want fills, but especially when there's injuries. So Leo picks up the win. I think it would have been a wider win if it wasn't in Japan. It was some close scorecards. You could attest to that.
No, it was actually a close fight. Kameda fought really smart and very savvy. He fought like a real veteran. Like, he was stealing rounds. He did a Sugar Ray Leonard versus Marvin Hagler, where he was like very composed, which he normally is
30
not.
30 seconds.
Yeah. And then just and throw hard, fast shots. He really saved up. He's normally like a volume guy. He did not fight like that. He fought to be very explosive with every punch he threw. He saved it. He didn't throw a ton of punches each round. And then at the end of each round, he like really kind of opened up trying to steal rounds. But I'm glad the judges paid attention and they did the right thing, because Leo won 11 and 12. The age started to catch up with Kameda, and Leo looked really good in round 11 and 12. So thank God they gave it to the right guy.
So Ring put out their featherweight rankings. I'm looking at what's next for Leo. He's one of the champions at featherweight, which I believe is one of the best divisions in boxing. So they have Espinosa number 1. They have Leo number 2. They have Nick Ball 3. They have Stephen Fulton 4. I think Fulton's a little low. I like Fulton.
You want him higher?
Yeah. I think Fulton's really good, man. I just think he's got that style. He can just diffuse. He's a diffuser. Like, Leo Fulton, I think, is a 50-50 fight. 60-40 Fulton, just from experience.
I like the freshness of Leo in that fight. Nick Ball and Fulton. Yeah, I can swap them either way. I can go either way with those two, 3 or 4. But I think I like those rankings. I think Espinosa is far and away the top of the division.
I have no debate there.
No, he's an absolute nightmare. 6'1" featherweight's crazy.
Leo too is That's
respectable, high. Arguable. You can argue it, but I like it. I think he's very talented. He's was that after this fight?
When was those rankings? This was May 20. Ring Magazine tweets a lot. May 23rd. Is that what day was May 23rd? That was Friday. So I guess this might have been right before.
Yeah. I can actually see him dropping because the fight was close with a guy who's older. Kameda. I mean, Kameda's always been tough, but.
Well, one and two are the guys that have fought most recently. Espinosa fought earlier this month and Leo just fought. Like Nick Ball, I don't think has anything on the schedule. Fulton might be going up to 130 to fight Foster.
Heard that.
Luis Alberto Lopez is 5. Figueroa, Bruce Carrington, 7. Robesi Ramirez, 9. This is just the ring rankings. I mean, I don't know how they go about there.
I'm not mad about those. I think those are good rankings.
So you think Leo, just talking to some people at ProBox, do you believe he's what's next for him? Unification? I mean, this is probably a really nice payday for him in Japan. Yeah. It's like these lower weights go over to Japan, get that dough, you know, get the fame. I read that he was. You know, picked star. Up a little bit of a fan base. That's great.
He's a star in Japan. And listen, he's a super respectable guy and he fights hard. So Japanese fans are going to love him. He said he's going to go. He's going to vacation in Japan in the summer, this summer. Smart. And then he's going to come back and look to fight in the fall. And he said, he's like, I'm completely willing to come back to Japan. So maybe he has a mandatory defense over in Japan and kind of waits for the Inoue fight. I think that'd be smart because I think, for one, him having a fan base in Japan already and them knowing him and also looking somewhat beatable in that fight with Kameda. I think there's a lot of positives for him to look like the Inoue fight is for real. If he can welcome Inoue to 126.
Well, that's what all these guys want to do, right?
Yeah, of course.
It's you got a monster hovering over the division.
Yeah, monster
financially.
Bag of money.
Potentially two bags of money. If you beat him the first time, you know you're getting a rematch.
Yeah.
Two bags. That's why Espinosa is probably on some fast like you are right now, so he doesn't balloon.
Gotta stay at 26, baby.
Fulton, all these guys. Fulton, the top four are in the mix for, I would say Carrington too, are in the mix for the Inoue sweepstakes. Espinosa, Leo, Ball, Fulton. Well, not Fulton. He already fought him. Maybe again. Who knows?
Carrington. I think the top two would be Ball and Leo. I think those are the guys if they because can stay undefeated.
And because of the politics of the sport, Leo has a top rank ties, has pro box ties. Easiest we've seen pro box guys get fed to Inoue. I mean derogatory because Cardenas put up a hell of a fight.
Hell of a fight.
Nick Ball, Simon Queensberry. Queensberry's got the Riyadh season connection. He's got the Riyadh season connection in a way. That's the rumor for as early as December. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think in a way, I don't know what in a way, what's up with him, what he wants to do. I'm not trying to get into that full discussion, but
that's a whole nother.
You know, in a way, will fight Nakatani. He will fight anyone.
Akpadaliev, so, anybody.
That's September. Would you be shocked if Inoue sits out the rest of the year? I know it would be a little shocking, but
after MJ,
right?
I can see
there'll
that.
Be three fights this year.
I would be shocked if he goes from MJ, which is not going to be an easy fight, right to Nakatani in 3 months.
That would crown the man.
That would be ridiculous. And if he did,
that's four fights this year.
Yeah, I mean that would be insane.
The January fight was kind of like a sparring session, but
that wasn't his fault. He was supposed to fight Sam Goodman, and that fight fell through. That was not his fault. He was supposed to fight a really good fighter. Sam Goodman's very good. So he did what he had to do with who he had. Cardenas, a lot of people are like, oh, he's fighting an Uber driver. But Cardenas is good and can fight and is at the level and showed that. And then Akhmadaliev is a very tough fight. So I don't think he should fight the rest of the year. We saw guys trying to get in extra fights. Munguia put that extra fight in and then gets iced by Saras.
Splattered. Yeah. All right, that's our episode. We'll be back later in the week. We have some fights this weekend over on Prime Video. The Jamal Charlo experience returns.
Nice.
Caleb Plant, who I will always support, one of boxing's most respected fighters, Caleb Plant. They're building up some type of Plant Charlo fight. Just excited to see some fights back in the States. No, you know, this past weekend was overseas Now we get some fights back on U.S. soil,
and
Vegas,
on Prime, which is cool.
Like free on Prime. Those cards have been good. Those cards have been very good in terms of like how fast they move them, and the fights have been good. Like they get a little bit of luck there with how these fights have turned out. I don't expect much from Cornflake, but who knows? I haven't seen Jermall Charlo in a ring in a long time.
That's what this fight's for. We're trying to see what is left in the tank for Charlo, and Cornflake is a perfect muse. To get that out of him.
That's the funniest nickname I've ever heard.
I think Plant is a tough fight. That kid is rough.
Resendez?
Yeah, Resendez is tough. He's a tough kid. So I think he'll make it fun. I think that's actually, I think you're right. I think these cards do pan out to be actually good fights. I think this will actually be a good card.
Love it. We'll be back later in the week with a preview for all that and more. Check yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up all the time. Let's go, Knicks!